living with a disability through the pandemic. 1 in 5 Americans lives with a disability. For most, the pandemic has made life even more complicated and frustrating than before. For example, people who already face challenges with transportation or restrictions in their living situations only saw their challenges exacerbated. Healthcare worker shortages disproportionately affected people with disabilities. Many people with disabilities are also immunocompromised. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will hear directly from some of those in the disability community about what it's been like, how the pandemic has exposed ableism in our culture, and we'll discuss some of the unexpected benefits of the pandemic, such as the normalization of virtual meetings. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling On Demand is made possible by Maine General Health, a comprehensive system for all your health care needs. Learn more at MaineGeneral.org and by the Maine Souvenir Shop, committed to supporting Maine artists and designers. Exchange Street in Portland, Instagram at MaineSouvenirShop.com.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Yes, the pandemic has created problems for everyone, but those living with disabilities have dealt with an added layer of challenges. Joining me today, Kim Moody, the Executive Director of Disability Rights Maine, Christine Patrick, a friend of mine and a spinal cord injury survivor, and Andrew Polrang, a freelance writer and columnist for Forbes. We invite you to join the conversation. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Post a comment on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Thank you all for being with us today. And Kim, before we start this conversation, I just want to acknowledge and be clear. We hear the statistics that 1 in 5 Americans lives with a disability. I've read that 1 in 3 adults in Maine lives with a disability. So we're talking about a lot of people, and it's really hard to say the disabled community because we're talking about all sorts of people with all sorts of needs, all sorts of abilities, all sorts of ways of living their lives. But given that, we need to acknowledge that this pandemic, this last couple of years, has been hard. I want to know what you're hearing from your colleagues, what you're hearing from your clients.
Thank you, Jennifer. I think you hit the nail on the head that really what people are saying is that COVID-19 has just made life harder. And I really think that what's difficult for the general population is often more difficult for people with disabilities. And in disasters and emergencies like this, people with disabilities are almost always disproportionately impacted, adversely impacted. So this pandemic has been no different. And you pointed out that there are so many different disabilities and so many people living in Maine with disabilities. One of the things that's the most egregious to me is that we know that people with disabilities, intellectual and developmental disabilities, have increased risk of severe outcomes. And studies have shown that people have a greater risk of death. And what a thing to know about yourself when you're living in congregate living and your staff refuses to wear a mask, you know, or refuses to get vaccinated. But you're right, it's all over the place. So, you know, deaf people are completely isolated because, of course, you need to be able to see people's facial expressions to communicate effectively. So even the simplest things are difficult now with a mask on. And one deaf person said to us that walking through a group of people is like walking through a sea of walls because of the masks. So, I mean, you're right. You get it. It's all over the place. People are experiencing lots of control over their lives. People in congregate settings can't go out, can't go places. It's very different from what it was before. And, you know, I know that you did a whole show about this, and I'm really, really thankful for that. But I think I would be really remiss if I didn't say that kids, I think, families, I think there's very little disagreement that families that include kids with significant disabilities and significant needs have really had this the hardest. Parents had to automatically become special educators, physical therapists, behavior specialists, everything. And then they had to quit their jobs. So, you know, Jennifer, as you have heard, I can go on and on about all of the adverse impact to people with disabilities due to COVID, but I should let other people speak.
Andrew, when I was doing research for this program, I was trying to read as much as I could about what this pandemic has been like for people in the disability community. And I was really surprised at the lack of coverage. And one of the reasons I found your columns is they were one of the few pieces of thoughtful, in-depth reporting and coverage in national publications about what's going on within the disability community. And I want to ask you, before I talk about one of your more recent columns, why do you think that is?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure how narrow and sparse the reporting is. It's hard for me to say because I kind of live in a bit of a bubble of a disability community that's very online. I spend a lot of time on Twitter and Facebook, but mostly Twitter, communicating with other disabled people, and including other people who are with disabilities, who are journalists, both for publications and freelance. And so from my perspective, it seems like we've not stopped talking since March 2020. But you know, for the general population, maybe we're not being heard. So there are others out there that have been writing about this off and on, but maybe it's just that it seems like a small number of people. It's really not just me. There are several others, but it's hard, of course, to get through.
Mm. One of your more recent columns talked about how different people are processing the pandemic, people within the disability community. Fascinating, because, of course, this reflects the public at large, the greater public at large. Mm-hmm. But why don't you talk about that? Why don't you talk about some of the conflicts within
sure.
this world that you're talking about, the people that you communicate with all the time, yeah. some of the different ways yeah. in which people are taking this all?
Well, you know, what Kim said just a bit ago really hints at that, which is, you know, first of all, there are different kinds of disabilities that mean different things in regard to, like, how vulnerable you are to actual COVID. And I think it's important to kind of distinguish between at least two different areas that we have to worry about. One is, you know, are we in fact more vulnerable to serious illness or death from COVID because of our conditions? And there's a whole bunch of people for whom that's really very true. And then another group of people where it's probably true or maybe true, but nobody can really tell us for sure. There's so many unknowns. So yeah, there's that one risk is, you know, am I more likely to die from COVID than my non-disabled neighbor or family member or what have you, coworker, fellow student? So we have to deal with that. And then there is the sort of secondary problem of, you know, are my circumstances because of being disabled such that I'm at higher risk and less able to protect myself? So there you got people who, as Kim referred to, are living in institutions of some kind, nursing homes, other care facilities, where the message is protect yourself, social distance, wear masks, don't, you know, stay away from risk. Well, if you're in an institutional setting, you have very limited individual ability to do any of that. If your institution's doing a great job, maybe it's okay. But if they're doing anything less than perfect, there's almost nothing that you can do about it. There's a whole bunch of people who are in those situations, a little less so, but still the same kind of thing. If you get home care, a lot of people with disabilities rely on home care every day. And if you do that, you know, it's a little bit more controllable. Instead of, you know, 50 people on staff being around you and other residents. It's, you know, maybe one or two people. But even then, do you have the ability to make sure that your aides are wearing masks? Right now, I think it depends on state, but a lot of people are finding that nursing homes are being regulated on precautions, but home care less so. And there's a crisis, a shortage of home care too. So yeah, those are issues. And then we get down to just the everyday personal choices, interaction issues where can we count on our neighbors, our coworkers, our fellow students, colleagues, even our families to really, really understand that they need to help protect us, right? And this is where sort of, this is where we've kind of rediscovered the depth, how deep ableism goes, the sort of short attention span that people do have for trying to help out. You know, for about, you know, 3 or 4 weeks in March 2020, it did seem like everybody was on board. And after that, it just kind of all flew apart to an extent. People got impatient, people got upset, understandably, but then, you know, trying to tell them that they still needed to help protect the more vulnerable, I think started to kind of fall off. And now with Omicron, and, you know, we have the worst wave of the pandemic coinciding with the most people who are sick of it all and just deciding to, as they say, let it rip. And we have to deal with that. But I sort of didn't answer your question because you asked about conflict, and overlying all of this is the fact that we have ideologies, we have political affiliations and commitments, if you will. So there are people with disabilities who are against masking and are think COVID's a hoax and have the whole range of opinions. Kim mentioned, you know, people in institutions, people with developmental and intellectual disabilities. I've run into some folks that are like, they are experiencing this as a loss of freedom because they're told when they can go out and who they can be with, but having no good explanation of why. It's like they experience all the restrictions without adequate explanation. So, you know, there are all kinds of ways.
You know, Andrew, in Maine, I think we're lucky, it's not just luck, but we don't have a big DD institution any longer, but we have hundreds of providers in the community. And that's precisely what we've heard during the entire pandemic from our clients who live in congregate living. The restrictions that were imposed upon them were even worse than before. I mean, their lives are already controlled to a huge extent, but all of a sudden they couldn't go anywhere. They were told who they could see. And they knew, our clients knew that their staff, when their shifts were over, could make that risk assessment that so many people with disabilities are not allowed to make, and that they could go into stores, and they could go to restaurants, and they could meet up with friends, and all of that, and that they weren't allowed to do that. And so, and you're right about people who are just unable to get in-home services wherever they are. And so people are regressing both physically and emotionally. I was told on Friday that, well, the shortage of in-home support workers, I'm sure across this country, but in Maine, it's truly at a critical, critical juncture. Friday, the executive director of the DD Provider Association in Maine told me that since March of 2020, they've had a 26% loss of staff within residential facilities. And so it's really, really that also impacts people's ability to get out into the community. So people are so isolated. And while we have, like, you know, Zoom is wonderful for all of us, it connects us so well, but it isolates people with disabilities more. So we really are in tough times. And all of that, the worst I think of all of it, Jennifer and Andrew, you know this, is that all of this is happening against the backdrop of debates about the value of our lives, the very value of our lives. And that, you know, rationing healthcare, who got the vaccine, it's pretty overwhelming for many, many people.
We're talking about the impact of the pandemic on people with disabilities. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. Christine Patrick, I want to bring you into the discussion because you are the reason we are having this discussion today. Christine Patrick, a friend of mine, and you have to travel for work, and you were telling me what it has been like for you to simply walk into a hotel lobby during this pandemic. You use a walker, and just something as simple as that is fraught. It may not be as simple as it was a year and a half, 2 years ago.
Yes. So travel, you know, with my spinal cord injury, now I have this fabulous rollator, but travel has always been a challenge. And of course, the pandemic has just exacerbated it. And there are services that are usually available when I fly to LAX or Seattle, these bigger airports. Even pre-pandemic, I needed to ask for help because I can't walk long distances. And all of this, you know, you prep for with the airlines, but with COVID, it's also the service industry. They don't have staff. So sometimes you'll have someone who checks you in for the plane that actually has to take you to your flight. You know, they're having to do, you know, multitasking and doing different jobs because, again, these services that I definitely relied on before for my travel have just disappeared. Curbside check-in, that was another thing when I used to go to Dulles or DCA. This is something that saved me because I had just traveled 2 hours to get to the airport, and those services have disappeared. Some of them are coming back, but it still is a work in progress, but that's also the other thing because staffing shortages. And, you know, to Jen's point, going to hotels, all of the services are gone. I would drive to Boston to go to my favorite hotel, valet, parking, gone. So you're supposed to walk 3 blocks to park your car, and you go to the lobby and they've taken out all the seating because they don't want people congregating because of COVID. So some of these things, some hotels are better than others, but it's just been a challenge with the pandemic because some of those services have disappeared. And also it's because of staffing is also a big issue.
And here you're trying. You're trying so hard to maintain, to work in a very high level job and to keep it together and to continue to travel. And it's as though the world is saying, oh, no, thank you.
No, it's a challenge.
We're not going to help you at all. And I'm wondering, Kim, when I listen to this, when I hear Christine talk about this, it seems to me, and she's walked me through some of her days, that some of these places are just thumbing their nose at the Americans with Disabilities Act. Are there lawsuits going on, or are places getting a pass on the ADA because of the pandemic?
You know, I don't know if there are lawsuits going on, and I don't know if hotels and other public accommodations are deliberately thumbing their nose at the ADA, or if, like what we experience normally, as we all know, people with disabilities are just a second thought. And I'm not saying we're you know, vulnerable or whatever, but we are definitely not thought of, just like during this pandemic. Christine gives a great example that hotels don't think, ooh, somebody who needs to sit down might need a chair here, or someone who is using a wheelchair and not an electric wheelchair might not be able to park 10 blocks away from the hotel, whatever. I don't think they're thinking of it. So you're right, though, Jennifer, it's up to us, advocates and lawyers for people with disabilities, to be reminding them. We have been in crisis mode. Everyone's been in crisis mode and really dealing with the most horrific situations, like, you know, rationing healthcare kind of stuff. So this hasn't even come to my radar, the thought about the ADA and whether or not it's being implemented. So,
we do need
you.
To go to a break. Our email, talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures, we celebrate the life of the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu with a rebroadcast of a conversation from 2010.
There is a resilience in the human spirit. There is something about us that does refuse to go under.
That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
Join us for City Arts and Lectures today at 2 on Maine Public Radio.
There is a plan to get the Postal Service's finances in order, but that could mean cuts in rural communities where it can already be a long haul to get to the post office.
For me, I have to get in my truck, drive half hour one way, 1 hour round trip to drop those pieces off at the post office.
I'm Rima Jerez, Post Office Access in Rural America. That is next time on Marketplace.
Join us for Marketplace today at 6:30. Listener support brings us Maine Calling, with help from Patriot Subaru and Saco, with the all-wheel symmetrical drive Subaru designed to help keep Mainers safe all winter. Patriot Subaru.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about people with disabilities during the pandemic. Joining me, Christine Patrick, who is the survivor of a spinal cord injury, Andrew Polrang, a writer and columnist for Forbes, and Kim Moody, the executive director of Disability Rights Maine. So many calls and questions coming in. If you would like to join the conversation, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, comment on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now, Abbott Filson, who is former board president of Speaking Up For Us. Abbott, thanks so much for calling in. Abbott, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Great. Tell me about how the pandemic has affected your everyday life.
Well, it went from me having lots of activities to everything shutting down, and then some of them went virtual to help keep us not being bored all the time.
Okay, so you live in congregate living, right?
Yes, I do.
And when you say everything shut down, does that mean that you have not been leaving your house?
In the beginning, I didn't, but now some of them are back, and I can go to some of them back in person safely.
All right. How about the people you live with? How are they coping?
They're coping. Sometimes it's difficult. I live with somebody that has trouble communicating, and it's been sort of hard on my roommate because there are things that my roommate used to do before the pandemic, and then when everything shut down and my roommate couldn't do those things, it was my roommate didn't really understand the changes, and my roommate reacts in different ways.
Well, Abbott, I appreciate you calling in and being part of this conversation today. Abbott Filson, a former board president of Speaking Up For Us. I'm going to go to Cecily, who's calling in from Sullivan. Hi, Cecily. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you. I am disabled. I have a prosthetic leg, and I have diabetes. And I guess two of my greatest frustrations have been people who refuse to wear masks. And I work part-time, but I've been staying home more than I want to and being isolated because I'm afraid of getting COVID because there's so many people running around without masks. So I really implore people to wear masks and to think about those who are at risk of dying if they catch COVID. So.
Thank you so much for bringing that up, Cecily. And Andrew, this is a big part of what you've written about. I'm looking at your column here. I'm going to read one of the tweets you shared. Most people who are so done with caring about COVID honestly never had to fear for their life because of COVID. So what you're actually saying is, I'm so done caring about you. COVID is a lot easier for people who don't have to fear their lives, and we don't talk about that.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's true now in a way more than ever, because we're at this weird stage where there are actual hopeful things going on, where vaccines are helping to make COVID less deadly for a lot of people, most people, but we're still not sure what they do for people at the highest level of risk. And many of us are still at very high risk. So, you know, it gets harder and harder to maintain that sense of urgency. And people are really done with it and are done with the back and forth. So, but still, it does feel very personal. Whether it is or not, almost doesn't matter in the end. When you are about to go, you've worked yourself up to go into the store, and then you see three people come out without wearing masks, and you think, oh, really, am I going to go in there or not? And then it sounds small. It sounds like just inconvenience, but it does feel personal. And it over many, many months, the impact on a lot of disabled people, I think, has been a real battering of our sense of worth and our sense of acceptance in society.
And Christine,
we've had to fight for that.
And Christine, this is something that you personally have had to deal with as well.
Yes. And I wanted to kind of take a positive spin, because there have been some silver linings to come out of the pandemic. Back to my travel schedule with Omicron, I had a very important trip planned to LA last week, and that was, again, supposed to be the height of Omicron, so I had to pivot it. And I pivoted all these meetings to Zooms, and they've been incredibly successful. So I think that's actually one of the positives, is that, yeah, I can do my job incredibly well and not get on a 5-hour flight to LA. So that's been kind of one of the silver linings of the pandemic. And other services that, you know, I don't go grocery shopping. I've always, pre-pandemic, grocery shopping isn't one of my skill sets. So I do the service where they put it, you know, I drive in, they put it in the back of my trunk. Also curbside deliveries, like, I hope those never go away, because those have been incredibly helpful. So again, there have been some silver linings to the pandemic, but one, the Zooms and the calls that we can connect and we can be very successful at our jobs remotely. And I also appreciate a Zoom, because you just concentrate on my face and not, oh my gosh, you know, you just had that fusion. How are you doing? You know, it's more of concentrating on the face and not my disabilities.
Cecily, thank you so much for calling in and joining the conversation. We'll go to Libris calling from Augusta. Hi, Libris, go ahead.
Good morning. I have two disabilities. I have a neurological problem, and I also have been hit by two cars in two different crosswalks, so my foot has an ulcerated foot. And trying to get services at all has been really a problem, because I was relying on Catholic Charities, who, for no fault of their own, they can't keep their volunteers and employees working to assist us, so they focus on the most needy. And the Department of Veterans Affairs, of course, was created by George W. Bush to eliminate the VA back in 2003. And he did what the Republicans have been complaining about for four decades, that the government should be run as a business, which means every time I go to the Department of Veterans Affairs, they're doing role model treatments rather than actually helping me with scientific medical treatments. And it's basically a commercial operation, and I keep getting my pension garnished for the services they provide to me. And I cannot get anybody to help shovel the snow ridge in front of my driveway, so that my nurses and physical therapist can get in here, so I have no place to park, and I can't even walk out to get to the bus, so I'm trapped in my house. And luckily, I stocked up for the winter, but I'm running low on food. So this pandemic thing has really hit us hard, and I'm really worried about our national defense, because with this pandemic eliminating so many people from providing services, that's also the people who support our military.
Libris, thank you for so much for your call. And Kim, I'm wondering if you've heard from others like Libris.
Yeah, it's a very common theme, Jennifer. People, I mean, from the lack of ability to get care to the lack of ability to get someone to help you out by shoveling your snow. I think both are. I was thinking about, as Libris was speaking, I was thinking about people with psychiatric labels and or diagnoses of mental illness in Maine who crises that were or could have been averted before the pandemic have not been able to be, for the same reason that mental health centers were open and people, the barriers to mental health services were broken down by the provider agencies and the state of Maine so that people could access care or treatment or counseling when they wanted to. They could just walk in when they were ready. And of course that can't happen anymore. So if people are in crisis, they cannot necessarily get those services. So it's across the board, I think, in terms of access to quality care for everyone with a disability.
Libris, thank you so much for calling, and I hope you're able to find somebody to shovel you out when it snows next. On the line with us now is Simone Mallon, Executive Director of the Consumer Counsel System of Maine. Simone, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You did. Thank you, Jennifer.
Oh, great. I understand that because of COVID, you've become the full-time caregiver for your husband. Tell us about that, how that came to be.
Well, I will tell you, my husband sustained a brain injury over 8 years ago, and for the last 6 years, we've been eligible for Maine Care services because he's nursing home eligible and has been in many nursing homes. And even before the pandemic, we were never fully staffed. So right now we have a 40-hour week person, and we're very grateful. We went to many extremes, including we moved her into our home during the pandemic and her two dogs in order to create a safe bubble for us to all be protected because she was at risk as well. So I also had to become on the payroll for my husband to support him. Now, I literally go from my full-time job working at the Consumer Council to home, and there isn't pretty much anything in between because when I am not working, I am taking care of my husband. We cannot require that anyone is vaccinated. We cannot require that anyone masks up in our home. So even if we were in a position to look for that second person to support us, there's no way we could at this time and keep ourselves safe during the pandemic. And it's been incredibly, incredibly stressful for that reason. I literally work and work at home, work in my 40-hour plus day job, and then I go home to care for my husband. Because our full-time worker is great, and she covers when I'm at work. But when she goes home, I'm it. And my husband has gone downhill because he's been unable to access adequate care to keep him strong and independent at home. So it's been a huge, huge challenge.
Simone, what needs to happen for this to end for you and for you and your family?
Well, certainly having staff. I mean, there was a staffing crisis for home care long before the pandemic, and it has only been made worse. I don't know how, you know, I know the state's working on workforce issues and all kinds of other things, but it is not a quick fix out of this situation. The most important thing for me is we're now figuring out how I can get an overnight respite. I just did one 2 weeks ago for the first time in 2 years. because I literally haven't been able to leave my husband alone at night. So those have been significant challenges. We're now in the process of starting a whole new rehab program for him, and it will probably take 6 months to 9 months to even be where he was before the pandemic, if we can get there. So there's been significant challenges, and I don't see an easy way out of this, honestly.
Simone, I so appreciate you calling and sharing your story, and I wish the very best to you and your husband, and hope that you're able to get some more support. That's Simone Mallon, the Executive Director of the Consumer Counsel System of Maine. We do need to go to another break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling, with help from Androscoggin Home Healthcare and Hospice, helping Medicare patients with palliative and hospice care at home or at their hospice house in Auburn.
I'm Tanya Mosley. Roblox is the most popular video game in Europe and the US, but some critics say Roblox isn't always the safest for young people.
It's so depressing to have the largest source of children's entertainment today in the hands of a corporation that clearly is not putting care and attention into keeping kids safe that it needs to.
Next time on Here and Now.
Join us for Here and Now today at noon. Maine Public is pleased to be a media sponsor of the 35th Annual Camden Conference, being held virtually February 25th through the 27th. This year's topic is Europe, challenged at home and abroad, with a full lineup of distinguished speakers, moderated by Marketplace Morning reporter David Brancaccio. To learn more about this year's Camden Conference and to register as a virtual attendee, please visit camdenconference.org.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Calling. We're discussing what the pandemic has been like for those living with disabilities, which is 1/5 of our population. Join our conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. You can tweet at Maine Calling, @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page or to Instagram. On the line with us now, Marco Orlando, who is speaking up for us, a member of Speaking Up for Us, and DD leader. And remind us, Marco, what we mean by that when we say a DD leader.
Intellectual and developmental disabilities.
All right. Tell us how the pandemic has changed your everyday life.
Well, I mean, I've been able to manage for the most part. My parents live right in town. I can reach out to them if I need to. I mean, my mind keeps me busy. It's not much fun being alone with my own thoughts sometimes. But I realize not everyone in my situation has been so lucky, because CDC guidelines keep changing, and it feels like a lot of us are trying to move on from COVID, even though it's still very much a thing. People are still getting sick. And it's hard to know what judgment calls need to be made, hard to know if the information we're getting out there is accurate, making sure that it's from a reliable source. There's also a lack of control for other people receiving services. Technology has pretty much become a lifeline for a lot of people right now, making sure people have broadband internet access. I am particularly worried about folks up in the county and down east. People up north and down east, making sure that those people can get connected, that they know how to use a computer, and can have access to one if they need to. There's also been some limited community access. People aren't able to get out into their communities the way they had been. I used to perform karaoke at a bar on Friday nights. I don't really have that opportunity right now. I mean, I've done it a few times, but nothing concrete, nothing long term. I used to run a small print shop out of my apartment. I did menus for a local pizza place. I made T-shirts for a local pride parade. But when COVID hit, it was hard to gauge the demand, because I knew other businesses were cutting back where they need to. They had to cut costs because they were suffering too. Work became less of a priority, so I wasn't really sure what to do, and employment pretty much got put on the back burner, and I had other goals to focus on. I was actually in driver's ed and putting in driving time in preparation for the road test. And I was a college student. I actually enrolled.
Marco, it sounds like everything changed.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like that you have really persevered despite that.
Well, I've tried.
Yeah. I appreciate you calling. I appreciate you sharing a little part of your story with us. Marco Orlando, Speaking Up For Us member and a DD leader. I'm going to move on to Lois, who's calling from Brunswick. Hi, Lois. Go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to share an email that I received from Woodford's. They are starting a caregiver wellness support group, and Simone just got to my heart because I'm a shared living provider and I understand everything she's going through. If you could call Woodford's to find out about this caregiver wellness group that starts today, in fact, I know the number is 878-9663. I'm not sure the extension.
Great. I will find out what I can and put that on our Facebook page. Thank you so much, Lois, for calling in with that information. I really appreciate that. Thank you for calling in with that information. One thing I want to circle back to, and Christine, I'll turn to you, is something that was brought up earlier in the program about how navigating this sort of healthcare world that so many people with disabilities have to, where in some places there is, and especially in Maine, that there is this requirement that there is masking and that there is there are vaccinations, but then in other places there is not that requirement. We did mention already group homes, but that you have faced a situation where somebody you work with was not required to be vaccinated or to mask.
Yes. So I just had a major spinal fusion. So physical therapy is critical to my recovery. And I've been working, I have an amazing group of doctors and surgeons, and I do Pilates, but my physical therapy doctor, who I've been working with for almost 10 years, is not vaccinated. So I had to, essentially, I can't go to him because I'm double vaccinated with a booster, and because of my underlying conditions, I don't have antibodies. So I have to protect myself, even though I miss seeing him. He was amazing, but he will not get vaccinated. And so that you have to ask those questions because he wasn't forthcoming with that. I wouldn't have known. And Omicron is just so transmissible. I'm not even going to Pilates now, even though, you know, my instructor is vaccinated, but I hear this all over the place. So many physical therapy doctors are just not getting vaccinated.
Right. And to be clear, in Maine, all healthcare providers must be vaccinated. But Kim, that doesn't mean that there aren't other places that are not healthcare providers, but have like group homes, or there are other places that provide what might be considered, I'm not sure what the right phrase is, but a place where you will receive a service that isn't technically a healthcare service where people are not required to be vaccinated.
Yeah, essential services, like Christine just said, PT, OT, even massage is essential for many people. And I think it's really important to underscore, Christine said, people are not necessarily forthcoming. You have to ask people, have you been vaccinated? Especially if you see somebody that works for you that doesn't have a mask on, you know, and that has happened. We have lots of calls about that. You know, I live in a group home and my staff won't mask and they won't vaccinate. And what can I do about that? And it seems like we should be able to do something about that, but we haven't been able to. It's a problem, a big problem.
Andrew, I want to bring up with you something that made national news a couple weeks ago, the comments that CDC Director Rochelle Walensky made and has since apologized for, talking about vaccinated individuals who have died were, quote, unwell to begin with. Tell me about exactly what she said, what you think she meant, what the response was from the disability community, and why it was so hurtful.
Well, okay. What I think she meant was that most people, quote unquote, can feel good about the fact that they're less likely to die or get really, really sick from Omicron because they're vaccinated. I think that's what she was trying to underscore. But again, that's what I think. But regardless of her intentions, the way that it came out made it sound like it was good news that only people with disabilities and chronic illness are dying. And again, this is all on top of, again, since March 2020, this feeling, not just of the inconveniences and the disruption of COVID, but the fear that we specifically were going to be somehow left out. What we've been talking about all of this morning has been various ways that when any system is under stress, the stuff that's for people with disabilities and chronic illnesses is the first stuff to fall off the plate. It's the first thing that people drop. They were slightly doing not too bad before. And then as soon as things are under stress, that's among the first stuff to get dropped. And so we felt in various forms under threat and devalued for a long time. And those comments just kind of made it boil over, and particularly disability social media really, really created a lot of furor. Now, something made good may have finally come out of that, because a bunch of disability organizations met with the director last Friday and had what seems like a productive discussion about not just why her comments were hurtful, because it's not about being hurt or hurt feelings. It's about substantive issues. And there may be a framework for discussion going forward to where the disability community has a seat at the table in pandemic planning. Again, it's all going to be about the follow-up. But that's it in a nutshell. It was a bad moment for the director and for the CDC, but hopefully something good might come of it.
We'll go to Joshua calling from Brunswick. Hi, Joshua. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Joshua Wiedemann, and I have cerebral palsy. And I would like to talk about the lack of handicap accessible housing and the HCDS regulations. They are implementing HCDS for people for home and community-based services. But if their providers don't come into compliance, where are we going to place our people with intellectual disabilities? Because Medicaid requires the individual to own the structure before Medicaid will pay for any accessibility.
Kim, is this an issue that Disability Rights Maine is working on?
excuse me, and I know Josh, and thank you, Josh, for calling in. It's not necessarily COVID related. There's a terrible lack of inaccessible and safe housing for people with disabilities. I mean, accessible and safe housing for people with disabilities. And Josh, to his credit, brings it up every chance he gets, which I appreciate. And it is something that we need to deal with and look at. I mean, it goes hand in hand with lots of other things that people with disabilities are facing. And it is somewhat pandemic related, because it's just gotten worse. People cannot find accessible places to live. There are no carpenters to build ramps, even if you have the money to pay for that ramp. People with disabilities, you know, I mentioned to you, Jennifer, have lost their jobs. And so the amount of money coming into households has significantly decreased. I think it was the National Governors Association that just came out and said that 20%, the workforce has decreased by 20% among people with disabilities since March of 2020. And the rate of employment of people with disabilities prior to that was just horribly low. So it's a big problem that we have. And people with disabilities are often essential workers. And so they were either told by their provider agencies, you can't go to work because you pose a risk to all of us. Or in some cases, I mean, many cases, people didn't dare go to work because people around them, if they were a greeter at Walmart, for example, people around them were not masking and they had other issues going on that made them more at risk of COVID, and so quit their jobs. So it's been a serious problem. And transportation too. I mean, it was already a problem for people with disabilities to get where they needed to go. And that has gotten worse, much worse during COVID. Much
so
of
really,
this, like,
thank you, Joshua, for your call. And Kim and Christine and Andrew and Christine, I'll go to you next. Really, in so many ways, this pandemic has exposed and really exacerbated so many of these underlying issues in our society. And this is yet another, Christine, in which we are seeing the ableism in our society. And this is showing and making worse some of the problems that so many Americans are facing every day, Americans who live with disabilities.
Thank you. But I have hope that it will improve. I'm always a hopeful person, and I do see changes at some of the airports. LaGuardia has been revived and they have services available. So I do think when we all get through this, hopefully services will return to normalcy and there will be, again, I have hope for the future.
Andrew, we have about a minute. What are your final thoughts?
I agree with Christine. I think there are glimmers of hope. I mean, I think one thing is we could end up with less institutionalization if we play things right. You know, one of the worst death toll in the pandemic was people who were living in congregate care. And from the very beginning, we were hoping and really pushing that as a pandemic measure, more people need to be able to live at home rather than in crowded institutions. And that's still something that I think we could look forward to in the near future.
All right, Kim.
Which would be a positive outcome.
Well, I certainly don't want to be the only one that's not hopeful. I'm always hopeful. So I hope we will learn from this pandemic a lot. And again, I just have to reiterate that one of the things we need to learn in order to not move back towards institutionalization is to really assess the damage that's happened to our kids across this country, our kids with disabilities who have lost out on education and lost out on services. If we don't assess that and figure out what that damage has been and address that, then some of these kids are not going to go into the workforce and they're not going to go on to education. So we need to do that.
Well, I want to thank all of you for joining us today. Kim Moody, the Executive Director of Disability Rights Maine, Christine Patrick, a spinal cord injury survivor, and Andrew Polrang, a freelance writer and columnist for Forbes. Today's sound engineer, KG Akimeladun, Maine Calling produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, hospital leaders join us to talk about the surging COVID crisis. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.